The women know as well as I that we don't have even 5 minutes. I hail Mustang's comms. No answer. Our ship must be dying. Bloody damn. Stay alive. Just stay alive. Why did I ever let her out of my sight?
We charged them, Victor was saying. Straight down the middle hall. They'll run like foxes from hounds.
Yes, Seffy says, finding a more kindred spirit in Victor than either might have thought prior to shedding blood together. I will follow you, daughter of the sun, to glory.
Piss on glory, Holliday says. Let the drill do its work. And sit here to die like pixies? Victor asks.
Before I can say a word, or do much of anything, there's a metallic wheeze behind me from the hydraulics in the wall, as the door to the bridge opens. Chapter 48 Imperator. We surge onto the bridge, expecting an ambush. Instead, it's calm. Clean, lights dimmed, just as Rogue prefers it. Beethoven streams from hidden speakers. Everyone is still at their stations. Wan faces illuminated by pale light. Two golds walk along the wide metal path that leads over the pits toward the front of the bridge, where Rogue stands orchestrating his battle before a 30-meter-wide holographic projection. Ships dance among the sensors. Framed by fire, he cycles through images, issuing commands like a great conductor summoning the passion of an orchestra. His mind, a beautiful, terrible weapon. He's destroying our fleet. Mustang's Deja Thoris leaks flame from her oxygen stores as the Colossus and her three escort destroyers continue to hammer her with railguns. Men and debris float through space. This is just one part of the larger battle. The great host of his force, including Antonia, has pursued Romulus, Orion, and the Telemannuses toward Jupiter. To our left, 20 meters away, near the bridge's armory, a tactical squad of Obsidian and Greys secure their heavy weapons and listen intently to their gold commanders, preparing to defend their bridge against me. And just to our right, at the control panel by the now-open door, unseen and unnoticed by anyone else on the bridge, trembles a small pink in a white valet's uniform. The passcode display glows green under her hands. Her thin figure is frail against the backdrop of war. But the woman's face is set defiantly, her finger on the door's release button, her mouth spreading into the most delightful little smile as she shuts the door behind us. All this in 3 seconds. The gold infantry commander sees us. Wolves, lovely as they are when they howl, kill best in silence. So I point to the left, and the Obsidian surge toward the soldiers listening to the gold. He shouts for them to turn, but Seffi is already on his men before they can lift their weapons, dancing through them with her blades fluttering into faces and knees. Her Valkyries smash into the rest. Only 2 guns go off by the time the gold's body slides off the end of Seffi's razor and thumps to the floor. Greys fire at us from the other side of the pit. Holliday and her commandos pick them off. My helmet slithers away.
Roke!
I snarl as my men continue to kill. He's turned now from his battle to see me. All the nobility in him, all the cold-blooded imperator, melting away, leaving him a stunned, startled man. Victra and I stalk across the bridge, blues beneath us to every side, staring up at us in confusion and fear, even as their ship is engaged in battle. Silently, Rogue's 2 Praetorians come at us. Both wear black and purple armor, adorned with the silver quarter moon of House Loon. We pair off on the metal bridge in the Hydra. Victra taking the right, me the left. My Praetorian is shorter than I. her helmet off, hair in a tight bun, ready to proclaim the grand laurels of her family. "My name is Felicia Al—" I feint a whip at her face. She brings her blade up, and Victra goes diagonal and impales her at the belly button. I finish her off with a neat decapitation. "Bye, Felicia," Victra spits, turning to the last Praetorian. "No substance these days. Are you of the same fiber?" The man drops his razor and goes to his knees, saying something about surrender. Victor's about to cut his head off anyway, when she glimpses me out of the corner of her eye. Grudgingly, she accepts his surrender, kicking him in the face, and hands him over to our obsidians, who secure the bridge. "You like the claw drills?" Victor asks, pacing to Roke's left, hungry for the kill. "That's some poetic justice for you, you little backstabbing bitch." The Blues still watch on, unsure of what to do. The boarding party that came for us now fills our place in the corridor, outside the bridge. We left the drill, but it would take them 10 minutes at least to breach the door. The comm on Roke's head buzzes with requests for orders. Squadrons he'd sent on attack runs now drift, overexposed. Their commanders, used to being guided by the invisible hand, now fight blind to the overall battle. It's the flaw in Roke's strategy. The individual initiative now creates chaos because the central intelligence has just gone silent. "Roke, tell your fleet to stand down," I demand. I'm soaked with sweat, hamstring pulled, hand trembling with exhaustion. I take a heavy step forward, boot clumping on steel. "Do it!" He stares past me, at the pink who let us onto the bridge. Voice thick with the betrayal of a lover instead of that of a master. "Amethea, even you." The young woman is not ashamed by his sadness. She pulls her shoulders back, anchoring herself to the spot. She removes the rose badge on her collar that marks her the property of the gens Fabii, and drops it to the ground. A tremor passes through my friend. "You romantic sop," Victra laughs. I close the distance between myself and Roke, boots tracking blood over his grey steel deck. I point to the display behind him, where Mustang's ship is dying. I can see the stars glittering through holes in her hull. But still the destroyers punish her. They are orientated off the bow of the Pax, 30 kilometers closer than her ship. "Tell them to stop firing," I say, pointing my razor at him. His own is on his hip. He knows how little it means to draw it against me. "Do it, now."
"No."
"That's Mustang," I say.
"She chose her fate."
"How many men did you send?" I ask coldly. "How many did you send to the Pax to bring me back here? 15,000? How many are on those destroyers?"
I slide back the protective sheath over my datapad on my left forearm and summon the reactor diagnostics of the Pax.
It pulses red.
We've reversed the coolant flow to let the reactor overheat.
A slight increase in the output demand, and it goes thermal. "Tell them to cease fire, or their lives are forfeit."
He lifts his gentle chin. "According to my conscience, I can give no such order."
He knows what it means.
"Then this is on both of us."
His head snaps towards his comblue. "Cyrus, tell the destroyers to take evasive action."
"Too late,"
Victor says, as I raise the output on the generator. It throbs an evil crimson on my datapad, washing us with its light. And on the hologram behind Roke, the Pax begins to release gouts of blue flame. Frantically responding to their Imperator, the destroyers halt their barrage on Mustang and try to jet away, but a bright light implodes in the center of the PAX, enveloping the metal decks and crumpling the hull as energy spasms outward. The shockwave hits the destroyers and, crumpling their hulls, smashes them into one another. The Colossus shudders around us, and we're knocked through space as well, but her shielding holds. The Deja Thoris drifts, lights dark. I can only pray that Mustang is alive. I bite the inside of my cheek to make me focus.
Why didn't you just use our guns?
Roke says, shaken by the loss of his men, of his destroyers, at being so outmaneuvered.
You could have crippled them.
I'm saving these guns, I say. They won't save you. He turns back to me. My fleet has yours in flight. They will decimate the remainder and return here and take the Colossus back. Then we'll see how well you hold a bridge.
Silly poet. Haven't you wondered where Severo is?
Victra asks. Don't tell me you lost track of him in all this. She nods to the screen where his fleet pursues the routed forces of the Moon Lords and Orion towards Jupiter.
He's about to make his entry.
When the battle began, the outermost of the inner four moons of Jupiter, Thebe, was in far rotation. But as the battle dragged on, her orbit brought her closer and closer, taking her across the path of my now-retreating navy, just under 20,000 kilometers from Io. Led by Antonia's flagship, Roke's fleet pursued, as they should have, to complete the destruction of my forces. What they did not anticipate was that my ships had always planned to bring them to Thebe, the proverbial dead horse. While I negotiated with Romulus, teams of helldivers were melting caverns into the face of barren Thebe. Now, as Roke's battlecruisers and torch ships passed the moon, Severo and 6,000 soldiers in starshells pour out of the caverns, and out the other side of the moon pours 2,000 leechcraft packed with 50,000 obsidians and 40,000 screaming reds. Railguns spray. Flak deploys last minute, but my forces envelop the enemy, latching onto their hulls like a cloud of lunar gutter mosquitoes, to burrow into their guts and claim the ships from the inside. Yet even my victory carries betrayal. Romulus had gold leechcraft of his own prepared to launch from the surface of the moon so that he could capture ships as well to balance my gains. But I need the ships more than he, and my reds collapsed the mouth of their tunnels at the same time Severo launches. By the time he realizes the sabotage, my fleet will outnumber his. I could not lure you to an asteroid field, so I brought one to you, I say to Roke, as we watch the battle unfold.
Well played, Roke whispers.
But we both know the plan works only because I have 100,000 obsidian and he does not. At most, his entire fleet has 10,000. Probably more like 7. Worse, how could he have known that I had so many, when every other Sons of Ares attack had rested on the backs of reds? Battles are won months before they are fought. I never had enough ships to beat him. But now my ships will continue to flee, continue to run away from his guns, as my men carve his battlecruisers apart from the inside. Slowly, his ships will become my ships, and fire on the very vessels they're in formation with. You can't defend against that. He can vent the ships, but my men will have magnetic gear, breathing masks. He'll only kill his own. The day is lost, I say to the thin Imperator. But you can still save lives. Tell your fleet to stand down. He shakes his head.
You're in a corner, poet, Victor says. There's no getting out. Time to do the right thing.
I know it's been a while. And destroy what's left of my honor, he asks quietly, as a group of 20 men in starshells penetrate the rear hangar of a nearby destroyer. I think not.
Honour?
Victor sneers.
What honour do you think you have? We were your friends, and you gave us up. Not just to be killed, but to be put in boxes, to be electrocuted, burned, tortured night and day for a year.
Here, in armour, it's hard to imagine the blonde warrior to have ever been a victim. But in her eyes there's that special sadness that comes from seeing the void, from feeling cut away from the rest of humanity. Her voice is thick with emotion.
We were your friends.
I swore an oath to protect the society, Victra. The same oath you both swore the day we stood before our betters and took the scar upon our faces. To protect the civilization that brought order to man.
Look upon what you've done instead.
He eyes the Valkyrie behind us in disgust.
You don't live in a bedtime story, whimpering little sod, she snaps. You think any of them care about you? Antonia? The Jackal? The Sovereign?
No, he says quietly. I have no such illusions. But it's not about them. It's not about me. Not every life is meant to be warm. Sometimes the cold is our duty, even if it pulls us from those we love. He looks pityingly at her.
You'll never be what Darrow wants. You have to know that. You think I'm here for him? She asks.
Roke frowns.
Then it's revenge.
No, she says angrily. It's more than that.
Who are you trying to fool? Roke asks, jerking his head toward me. Him or yourself?
The question catches Victor off guard. Roke, think of your men, I say. How many more have to die?
If you care so much for life, tell yours to stop firing. Roke replies.
Tell them to fall in line and understand that life isn't free. It isn't without sacrifice.
If all take what they want, how long will it be till there's nothing left? It breaks me to hear him say those words. My friend has always had his own way of things, his own tides that come in and out. It is not in his nature to hate, nor was it in mine. Our world's made us what we are, and all this pain we suffer is to fix the folly of those who came before, who shaped the world in their image and left us the ruin of their feast. Ships detonate in his irises, washing his pale face with furious light.
All this,
he whispers, feeling the end coming.
Was she so lovely?
Yes. She was like you, I say. A dreamer. He's too young to look so old. Were it not for the lines on his face and the world between us, it would seem only yesterday that he crouched before me as I shivered on the floor of the Mars Castle after killing Julian, and he told me that when you're thrown in the deep, there's only one choice. Keep swimming or drown. I should have loved him more. I would have done anything to keep him at my side and show him the love he deserves. But life is the present and the future, not the past. It's as if we look at each other from distant shores, and the river between widens and roars and darkens, till our faces are pale shards of the moon in the deep night. More ideas of the boys we were than the men we are. I see the resolve forming in his face, the determination pulling him away from this life. You don't have to die.
I have lost
the invincible armada.
He says, stepping back, his hand tightening on his razor. Behind him, the display shows Sevro's trap ruining the main body of his fleet.
How can I go on? How can I bear this shame?
I know shame. I watched my wife die, I say. Then I killed myself. Let them hang me to end it all, to escape the pain. I've felt that guilt every day since. This is not the way out.
My heart breaks for who you were, he says, for that boy who watched his wife die. My heart broke in that garden. It breaks now, knowing all you suffered. But the only solace was my duty, and now that has been robbed from me. All the remittance I've attempted to make, gone. I love the society. I love my people.
His voice softens.
Can't you see that?
I can. And you love yours. It's not judgment, not forgiveness that he gives me. It's just a smile. I cannot watch mine fade. I cannot watch it all burn. It won't. It will. Our age is ending. I feel the days shortening, the brief light dimming upon the kingdom of man.
Roke. Let him do it, Victor says from behind me. He chose his fate.
I hate her for being so cold, even now. How can she not see that beneath his deeds, he's a good man? He's still our friend, despite what he's done to us.
I'm sorry for what happened, Victor. Remember me fondly.
I won't.
He favors her with a sad smile as he strips the Imperator badge from his left shoulder and clutches it in his hand, drawing his strength from it. But then he tosses it to the ground. There's tears in his eyes as he strips away the other. I do not deserve these. But I shall have glory by losing this day. More than you by vile conquest shall attain.
Roke, just listen to me. This is not the end. This is the beginning. We can repair what's broken. The worlds need Roke al-Fabiai.
I hesitate.
I need you.
There is no place for me in your world. We were brothers, but I would kill you, if only I had the power. I'm in a dream, unable to change the forces that move around me, to stop the sand from slipping through my fingers. I set this into motion, but didn't have the heart or strength or cunning or whatever the hell I needed to stop it. No matter what I do or say, Roke was lost to me the moment he discovered what I am.
I step toward him, thinking I can take his razor from his hand without killing him. But he knows my intention, and he holds up his offhand plaintively, as if to comfort me and beg me the mercy of letting him die as he lived.
Be still. Night hangs upon mine eyes.
He looks to me, eyes full with tears.
Keep swimming, my friend, I tell him.
With a gentle nod, he wraps his razor whip around his throat and stiffens his spine.
I am Roke al-Fabiai of the Gens Fabiai. My ancestors walked upon Red Mars. They fell upon old Earth. I have lost the day, but I have not lost myself. I will not be a prisoner.
His eyes close. His hand trembles.
I am the star in the night sky. I am the blade in the twilight. I am the god, the glory. His breath shudders out. He is afraid.
I am the gold.
And there, on the bridge of his invincible warship, as his famous fleet falls to ruin behind him, the poet of Deimos takes his own life. Somewhere, the wind howls, and the darkness whispers that I'm running out of friends, running out of light. The blood slithers away from his body toward my boots, a shard of my own reflection trapped in its red fingers. Chapter 49. Colossus. Victra is less shaken than I. She assumes command as I linger over Roke's corpse. His lifeless eyes stare at the ground. Blood thunders in my ears. If the war rages on, Victra's standing over the blue operations pit, face drawn in determination.
Does anyone contest that this ship now belongs to the Rising?
Not a sailor says a word.
Good. Follow orders, and you'll keep your post. If you can't follow orders, stand up now, and you'll be a prisoner of war. If you say you can follow orders but don't, we shoot you in the head. Choose.
Seven blues stand. Holiday escorts them out of the pit.
Welcome to the Rising,
Victor says to the remainders.
The battle is far from won. Give me a direct link to Persephone's Howl and Reynard. Main screen.
Belay that, I say. Victor, make the call on your datapad. I don't want to broadcast the fact that we've taken the ship just yet. Victor nods and punches her datapad several times. Orion and Daxo appear on the holo. The dark woman speaks first.
Victor, where is Darrow?
Here,
Victor says quickly. What's your status? Have you heard from Virginia?
A third of the enemy fleet is boarded. Virginia is aboard an escape pod, about to be picked up by the Echo of Ismania. Severo's in the halls of their secondary flagship. Periodic reports. He's making headway. Telemannus and Ra are pinching.
An even match, Daxo says. We'll need the Colossus to tilt the odds. My father and sisters have boarded the Pandora. They're striking for Antonia.
The conversation feels a world away. Through my grief, I feel Sephi approach me. She kneels beside Rogue. This man was your friend? She says. I nod numbly. He is not gone. He is here. She touches her own heart. He is there. She points to the stars on the hollow. I look over at her, surprised by the deep current she reveals to me. The respect she gives Roke now doesn't heal my wounds, but it makes them feel less hollow. Let him see, she says, nodding to his eyes. The purest gold, they stare now at the ground. So I unscrew my gauntlet and close them with my bare fingers. Sephi smiles, and I gain my feet beside her.
Pandora is moving lateral to Sector D6, Orion says of Antonia's ship.
On the display, the Severus Julii ships are separating from the Sword Armada and firing at each other to try and skin away the leechcraft which festooned them. She's shifting power to engines and away from shields, and angling away from the engagement.
Now D7. She's abandoning them,
Victor says, dumbfounded.
The little shit is saving her own hide.
The Society Praetors must not believe what they're seeing. Even if I brought the Colossus to bear on them, the fleets would be evenly matched. The battle would last another 12 hours and exhaust both our fleets. Now it crumbles apart.
Whether by cowardice or betrayal, I don't know, but Antonia just gave us the battle on a silver platter.
She's left us a gap, Orion says.
Her eyes go distant as she sinks with her ship captains and her own vessel, thrusting the huge capital ships into the region formerly occupied by Antonia, which brings them into the flank of the main enemy body.
Do not let her escape! Victress snarls.
But neither Daxo nor Orion can spare the ships to pursue Antonia. They're too busy taking advantage of her absence.
We can catch her, Victress says to herself.
Engines, prepare to give us 60% thrust. Escalate by 10% over 5. Helmsman, set our course for the Pandora.
I make a quick assessment. Of our small battle at the rear of the war zone, we're the only ship still battle-ready. The rest are drifting rubble. But the Colossus has not yet made an action or a declaration that its bridge has been taken by the Rising, which means we have an opportunity.
Belay that, I snap.
What?
Victor wheels on me.
Darrow, we have to catch her.
There's something else that needs doing.
She'll escape.
And we'll hunt her down.
Not if she gets enough of a lead. We'll be tied here for hours.
You promised me my sister.
And I'll deliver. Think beyond yourself, I say.
Bridge shields down.
I ignore the wrathful woman's glare and walk past Roke's body to peer into the blackness of space as the metal shielding beyond the glass viewports slides into the wall. In the far distance, ships flicker and flash against the marble backdrop of Jupiter. Io is beneath us, and far to our left. The city moon of Ganymede glows, large as a plum.
Holiday. Recall all available infantry to protect the bridge and make safe the vessel. Seffi, make sure no one gets through that door.
Helmsman, set course for Ganymede.
Do not make any society ships aware the bridge is taken. Do I make myself clear? No broadcasts.
The Blues follow my instructions.
To Ganymede?
Victor asks, eyeing her sister's ship.
But Antonia, the battle...
The battle is won. Your sister made sure of that.
Then what are we doing?
Our ship's engines throb, and we untangle ourselves from the wreckage of the Pax and Mustang's devastated strike group. Winning the next war.
Excuse me.
I wipe blood from my armored kneecap onto my face and let my helmet slither over my head. The HUD display expands. I wait. And then, as expected, a call from Romulus comes. I let it flash on the left-hand side of my screen, altering my breathing so it seems I've been running. I accept the call. His face expands over the left eighth of my visor's vision. He's in a firefight, but my vision is as constricted as his. All I can see is his face in his helmet.
Daru, where are you?
In the halls, I say.
I pant and crouch on a knee, as if taking a respite.
Pressing for the Colossus's bridge.
You're not in yet?
Roke initiated lockdown protocol. It's thick going, I say.
Dada, listen carefully. The Colossus has altered trajectory and is headed for Ganymede.
The docks, I whisper intensely. He's going for the docks. Can any ships intercept?
No, they're out of position. If Octavia can't win, she'll ruin us. Those docks are my people's future. You must take that bridge at all cost.
I will. But Romulus, he has nukes on board. What if it's not just the docks he's going for?
Romulus pales.
Stop him, please. Your people are down there too.
I'll do my best.
Thank you, Dara. And good luck. First cohort, on me.
The connection dies. I remove my helmet. My men stare at me. They haven't heard the conversation, but they know what I'm doing now.
You're going to destroy Romulus's dockyards around Ganymede, Victor says.
Holy shit, Holliday mutters. Holy shit.
I'm not destroying anything, I reply. I'm fighting my way through corridors, trying to reach the bridge. Roke is ordering this move as his last act of violence before I claim his command. Victor's eyes light up, but even she has reservations. If Romulus finds out, if he even suspects, he'll fire on our forces and everything we've won today goes to ash. And who will tell him? I ask. I look around the bridge. Who will tell him? I look to Holliday. If anyone sends a signal out, shoot them in the head. Wipe the video memory from the whole ship.
If I ruin Ganymede's dockyards, the Rim won't be able to threaten us for 50 years.
Romulus is an ally today, but I know he will threaten the Corps if the Rising succeeds. If I must give Roke for this victory, if I must give the suns on these moons, I will take something in return.
I look down. Red boot prints follow my path. I didn't even realize I'd stepped in Roke's blood. We carve our way free of the debris formed by Mustang's fleet and mine, and break away from Jupiter toward Ganymede, leaving her behind. I feel the pulsing desperation as the Moon Lords send their fastest craft to intercept us. We shoot them down. All the pride and hope of Romulus's people are in the rivets and assembly lines and electric shops of that dull grey ring of metal. All their promises of power and future independence are at my mercy. When I reach the sparkling gem that is Ganymede, I bring the Colossus parallel to the monument of industry they've built in orbit at her equator. The Valkyrie gather behind us at the viewport, Sephi staring in awe at the majesty and triumph of Gold Will. 200 kilometers of docks. Hundreds of haulers and freighters. Birthplace of the greatest ships in the Sol system, including the Colossus herself. Like any good monster of myth, the girl must eat her mother before being free to pursue her true destiny. That destiny is leading the assault on the core. Men built this? Sephi asks with quiet reverence. Many of her Valkyrie have fallen to a knee to watch in wonder. My people built it, I said. Reds. It took 250 years. It's how old the first dock there is, Victor says, shoulder to shoulder with me. Hundreds of escape pods flower out from her metal carapace. They know why we're here. They're evacuating the senior administrators, the overseers. I'm under no delusion. I know who will die when we fire.
There's still going to be thousands of reds on there, Holliday says quietly to me. Oranges, blues, greys.
He knows that, Victor says. Holliday doesn't leave my side.
You sure you want to do this, sir?
Want to?
I ask hollowly. Since when has any of this been about what we want? I turn to the helmsman, about to give the order when Victor puts a hand on my shoulder.
Share the load, darling. This one's on me.
Her aureate voice rings clear and loud.
Helmsman, open fire with all port batteries. Launch tubes 21 through 50 at their center line.
Together, we stand shoulder to shoulder and watch the warship lay ruin to the defenseless dock. Sephi stares out in profound awe. She has watched the hollows of ship warfare, but her war until now has been narrow halls and men and gunfire. This is the first time they see what a vessel of war can do. And for the first time, I see her frightened. It's a crime that the Marvel should die like this. No song, nothing but silence and the unblinking gaze of the stars to herald the end of one of the great monuments of the Golden Age. And I hear, in the back of my mind, that age-old truth of darkness whispering to me, death begets death begets death. The moment is sadder than I wanted. So I turn to Sephi as the dock continues to fall apart. The shattered bits drifting down to the moon, where they will fall into the sea, or upon the cities of Ganymede. The ship must be renamed, I say. I would like you to choose. Her face is stained with white light. Tir Morga, she says without hesitation. What's that mean? Holliday asks. I look back out the viewport as explosions ripple through the dock and her escape pods flare against the atmosphere of Ganymede. It means Morning Star. Part 4. Stars. My son, remember the chains, when gold ruled with iron reins. We roared and roared, and twisted and screamed for hours, a veil of better dreams. Io of Lycos. Chapter 50. Thunder and Lightning. The Sword Armada is shattered, more than half destroyed, a quarter seized by my ships, the remainder fled with Antonia, or in little ragged bands, rallying around the remaining praetors to sprint for the core. I sent Thraxa and her sisters in fast-moving corvettes out under Victor's command to reel Antonia in and recapture Kavax, who was captured by Antonia's forces while attempting to board the Pandora. I asked Severo to go with Victor, thinking to keep the two of them together, but he went to her ship, then returned a half hour before it departed, wrathful and quiet, refusing to discuss whatever it was that transpired. For her part, Mustang is beside herself with worry for Kavax, though she makes a brave face. She'd lead the rescue mission herself if she weren't needed in the main fleet. We make repairs where we can, to make the ships fit for travel. We scuttle the ships we can't save, and search the naval debris for survivors. A tentative alliance exists between the Rising and the Moon Lords, one that will not last long. I've not slept since the battle 2 days ago. Neither, it seems, has Romulus. His eyes are dark with anger and exhaustion. He's lost an arm and a son on the day, and more, so much more. Neither one of us could risk meeting in person, so all we have left between us is this hollow conference. As promised, you have your independence, I say. And you have your ships, he replies. Marble columns stretch up behind him, carved with Ptolemaic effigies. He's on Ganymede, in the Hanging Palace, the heart of their civilization. But they will not be enough to defeat the core. The Ash Lord will be waiting for you. I hope so. I have plans for his master. Do you sail on Mars? Perhaps. He allows a thoughtful silence. There's one thing I find curious about the battle. Of all of the ships my men boarded, not one nuclear weapon over 5 megatons was found. Despite your claims. Despite your evidence. My men found plenty enough. I lie.
Come aboard if you doubt me. It's hardly curious that they would store them on the Colossus. Roke would want to keep them under tight watch. We're only lucky that I managed to take the bridge when I did. Docks can be rebuilt. Lives cannot.
Did they ever have them?
Romulus asks.
Would I risk the future of my people on a lie?
I smile, without humor.
Your moons are safe.
You define your own future now, Romulus.
Do not look the gift horse in the mouth.
Indeed, he says, though he sees through the lie now, knows he was manipulated. But it is the lie he must sell to his own people if he wants peace. They cannot afford to go to war with me now, but their honor would demand it if they knew what I'd done. And if they went to war with me, I would likely win. I have more ships now. But they'd hurt me bad enough to ruin my real war against the Corps. So Romulus swallows my lies, and I swallow the guilt of leaving hundreds of millions in slavery and personally signing the death warrants of thousands of sons of Ares to Romulus's police. I gave them warning, but not all will escape.
I would like your fleet to depart before end of day, Romulus says.
It will take 3 days to search the debris for our survivors, I say. We will leave then.
Very well. My ships will escort your fleet to the boundaries we agreed upon. When your flagship crosses into the asteroid belt, you may never return. If one ship under your command crosses that boundary, it will be war between us.
I remember the terms.
See that you do.
Give my regards to the Corps.
I'll certainly give yours to the sons of Ares you leave behind.
He terminates the signal.
We depart 3 days after my conference with Romulus, making additional repairs as we travel. Welders and repairmen dot hulls like benevolent barnacles. Though we lost more than 25 capital ships during the battle, we've gained over 70 more. It is one of the greatest military victories in modern history.
But victories are less romantic when you're cleaning your friends off the floor. It's easy to be bold in the moment, because all you have is what you can process. See, smell, feel, taste. And that's a very small amount of what is. But afterward, when everything decompresses and uncoils bit by bit, and the horror of what you did and what happened to your friends hits you, it's overwhelming. That's the curse of this naval war. You fight, then spend months waiting, engaged only by the tedium of routine. Then you fight again.
I've not yet told my men where we sail. They don't ask me themselves, but their officers do, and again I give them the same answer.
Where we must.
The core of my army is the sons of Ares, and they are experienced in hardship. They organize dances and gatherings, and force jubilation down war-weary throats. It seems to take. Men and women whistle in the halls as we distance ourselves from Jupiter. They sew unit badges onto uniforms and paint star shells in wild colors. There's a vibrancy here different from the cold precision of the Society Navy. Still, they keep mostly to their color, blending only when assigned to do so. It's not as harmonious as I thought it would be, but it's a start. I feel disconnected from it all, even as I smile and lead as best I know. I killed 10 men in the corridors. Killed another 13,000 of my own when we destroyed the docks. Their faces don't haunt me. But that feeling of dread is hard to lose. We have not yet been able to contact the Sons of Ares. Communications are blacked out across all channels, which means Nerol succeeded in destroying the relays, as he promised.
Gold and red are just as blind now.
I give Roke the burial he would have wanted, not in the soil of some foreign moon, but in the sun. His casket is made of metal, a torpedo with a hatch through which Mustang and I slip his body. The howlers smuggled him from the overflowing morgue so we could say goodbye to him in secret. With so many of our own dead, it would not do to see me honor an enemy so deeply. Few mourn the death of my friend. Roke, if he is remembered by his people, will forever be known as the man who lost the fleet. A modern Gaius Terentius Varro, the fool who let Hannibal encircle him at Cannae. Or Alfred Jones, the American general who went mad and lost his Imperium's dreaded mech division in the Conquering. To my people, he is just another gold who thought himself immortal till the Reaper showed him otherwise. It's a lonely thing carrying the body of someone dead and loved. Like a vase you know will never again hold flowers. I wish he believed as firmly in the afterlife as I once did, as Ragnar did. I'm not sure when I lost my faith. I don't think it's something that just happens. Maybe I've been worn down bit by bit, pretending to believe in the veil because it's easier than the alternative. I wish Roke would have thought he was going to a better world. But he died believing only in gold, and anything that believes only in itself cannot go happily into the night. When it is my turn to say goodbye, I stare at his face and see nothing but memories. I think of him on the bed, reading before the gala, before I stabbed him with the sedative. I see him in his suit, pleading with me to come along with him and Mustang to the opera in Aegea, saying how much I delight in the plight of Orpheus. I see him laughing by the fire at her estate after the Battle of Mars, his arms around me as he sobbed after I came home to House Mars when we were hardly more than boys. Now he is cold, eyes ringed with circles, all the promise of youth fled. All the possibilities of family and children and joy and growing old and wise together are gone because of me. I'm reminded of Tactus now, and I feel tears coming. My friends, the Howlers in particular, do not much like that I've let Cassius come to the funeral, but I could not stand the idea of sending Roke to the sun without the Bellona kissing him farewell. His legs are chained, hands manacled behind his back with magnetic cuffs. I uncuff them so he can say goodbye properly, which he does, leaning to kiss Roke farewell on the brow. Severo, pitiless even now, slams shut the metal lid after Cassius is done. Like Mustang, the little gold came for me, in case I needed him. He has no love for the man, no heart for someone who betrayed me and Victra. Loyalty is everything to him. And, in his mind, Roke had none. So too with Mustang. Roke betrayed her as readily as he betrayed me. He cost her a father, and though she can understand Augustus was not the best of men, he was her father nonetheless. My friends wait for me to say something. There's nothing I can say that will not anger them, so, as Mustang recommended, I spare them the indignity of having to listen to compliments about a man who signed their death warrants, and instead recite the most relevant lines of one of his old favorites. Fear no more the heat of the sun, nor the furious winter's rages. Thou thy worldly task hast done, home art gone, and ta'en thy wages. Golden lads and girls all must, as chimney sweepers, come to dust. Per aspera ad astra, my golden friends whisper, even several.
and with the press of a button, Roke disappears from our lives to begin his last journey to join Ragnar and generations of fallen warriors in the sun. I remain behind. The others leave. Mustang lingers with me, eyes following Cassius as he's escorted away. "What are your plans for him?" she asks me when we're left alone. "I don't know," I say, angry she would ask that now.
"Darrow, are you all right?"
"Fine. I just need to be alone right now."
"Okay."
She doesn't leave me. Instead, she steps closer.
"It's not your fault."
I said, "I want to be alone."
"It's not your fault."
I look over at her, angry she won't leave. But when I see how gentle her eyes are, how open to me they are, I feel the tension in my ribs release. The tears come, unbidden, streaking down my cheeks.
"It's not your fault,"
she says, pulling me close as I feel the first sob rattle my chest. She wraps her arms around my waist and puts her forehead into my chest.
"It's not your fault."
Later that night, my friends and I have supper together in the stateroom I've inherited from Roke. It's a quiet affair. Even Severo doesn't have much to say. He's been quiet since Victra left, something gnawing in the back of his mind. The trauma of the past few days weighs heavy on all of us. But these few men and women know where we travel, and it's that knowledge that adds even more weight than the regular soldier carries. Mustang wants to stay behind with me, but I don't want her to. I need time to think. So I quietly click the door shut behind her. I am alone. Not just at the table in my suite, but in my grief. My friends came to Roke's funeral for me, not him. Only Sephi was kind about his passing, because over the course of our journey to Jupiter, she learned of Roke's prowess in battle, and so respected him in a pure way the others can't. Still, of my friends, only I loved Roke as much as he deserved in the end. The Imperator's stateroom still smells like Roke. I leaf through the old books on his shelves. A piece of blackened ship metal floats in a display case. Several other trophies hang on the wall. Gifts from the Sovereign, for heroism at the Battle of Deimos, and from the Archgovernor of Mars, for the defense of Oriet society. Sophocles' Theban Plays lies open on the bedside. I've not changed the page. I've not changed anything. As if by preserving the room, I can keep him alive. A spirit in amber. I lie down to sleep, but can only stare at the ceiling. So I rise and pour 3 fingers of scotch from one of his decanters and watch the holotube in the lounge. The web is down, thanks to the hacking war. Creates an eerie feeling being disconnected from the rest of humanity. So I search the old programs on the ship's computer, skimming through vids of space pirates, noble golden knights, obsidian bounty hunters, and a troubled violet musician on Venus, till I find a menu with recently played vids catalogued. The most recent dates to the night before the battle. My heart thumps heavily in my chest as I sort through the vids. I look over my shoulder, like I'm going through someone else's journal. Some are Aegean renditions of Roke's favourite opera, Tristan and Isolde, but most are feeds from our time at the Institute. I sit there, my hand in the air, about to click on the feed, but instead I feel compelled to wait. I call Holiday on my comm. You up? Now I am. I need a favor. Don't you always? 20 minutes later, Cassius, chained hand and foot, shuffles in from the hall to join me. He's escorted by Holiday and 3 sons. I excuse them, nodding my thanks to Holiday. I can take care of myself.
Begging your pardon, sir, that's not exactly a fact.
Holiday. We'll be right outside, sir. You can go to bed. Just chat if you need anything, sir.
Ironclad discipline you have here, Cassius says awkwardly after she's left. He stands in my circular marble atrium, eyeing the sculptures. Roke always did dress up a place. Unfortunately, he's got the taste of a 90-year-old orchestra first chair.
Born 3 millennia late, wasn't he? I reply.
I rather think he would have hated the toga of Rome. Distressing fashion trend, really. They made an effort to bring it back in my father's day, especially during drinking bouts and some of the breakfast clubs they had back then. I've seen the pictures.
He shudders. Dreadful stuff. One day they'll say it about our high collars, I say, touching mine. He eyes the scotch in my hand.
There's a social occasion.
Not exactly. I lead him into the lounge. He's slow and loud in the 40-kilogram prisoner boots they've sealed his feet inside, but is still more at home in the room than I am. I pour him a scotch as he sits on the couch, still expecting some sort of trap. He raises his eyebrows at the glass.
Really, Darrow? Poison isn't your style.
It's a cache of Lagavulin, Lorne's gift to Roke after the Siege of Mars.
Cassius grunts. I never was fond of irony. Whiskey, on the other hand, we never had a quarrel we couldn't solve.
He looks through the whiskey.
Fine stuff.
Reminds me of my father, I say, listening to the soft hum of the air vents above. Not that the stuff he drank was good for anything more than cleaning gears and killing brain cells.
How old were you when he died?
Cassius asks.
About 6, I reckon.
6?
He tilts his glass thoughtfully.
My father wasn't a solitary drinker, but sometimes I'd find him on his favourite bench, near this eerie path on the spine of the Mons. He'd have a whiskey like this.
Cassius chews the inside of his cheek.
Those were my favourite moments with him. No one else around, just eagles coasting in the distance. He'd tell me what sort of trees were on the hillside. He loved trees. He'd ramble on about what grew where and why and what birds liked to roost there, especially in winter. Something about how they looked in the cold. I never really listened to him. Wish I had.
He takes a drink. He'll find the spirit in the glass. The peat, the grapefruit on the tongue, the stone of Scotland. I can never taste anything but the smoke.
Is that Castle Mars?
Cassius asks, nodding to the hologram above Roke's console.
By Jove, it looks so small.
Not even the size of the engines on a torchship, I say.
Boggles the mind, the exponential expectations of life.
I laugh.
I used to think greys were tall.
Well,
he smiles mischievously. If your metric is Sevro,
he chuckles before growing serious.
I wanted to say thank you for inviting me to the funeral. That was surprisingly decent of you.
You'd have done the same.
Hmm.
He's not sure of that.
This was Roke's console?
Yeah. I was going through his vids. He's rewatched most of these 12 times. Not the strategies or the battles against other houses, but the quieter bits, you know.
Have you watched them?
He asks. I wanted to wait for you. He struck by that, and suspicious of my hospitality. So I press play, and we fall back into the boys we were in the Institute. It's awkward at first, but soon the whiskey dispels that, and the laughs come easier. The silences stretch deeper. We watch the nights when our tribe cooked lamb in the northern gulch, when we scouted the highlands, listening to Quinn's stories by the campfire. We kiss that night, Cassius says, when Quinn finishes a story about her grandmother's fourth attempt to build a house in a mountain valley, 100 kilometers from civilization, without an architect. She was climbing into her sleeping roll. I told her I heard a noise. We investigated. When she found out I was just throwing rocks into the dark to get her alone, she knew what I wanted. That smile. He laughs. Those legs. The kind meant to be wrapped around someone. You know what I mean? He laughs. But the lady did protest. Put her hand in my face. Shoved me away. Well, she wasn't an easy one, I say. No, but she did wake me up near morning to give me a kiss or two. On her terms, of course. And that is the first time throwing stones has ever worked on a woman. You'd be surprised. There's moments I never knew existed. Roke and Cassius try to catch fish together, only for Quinn to push Cassius in from behind. He takes a deep drink beside me now, as his younger self splashes in the water and tries to pull Quinn in. We watch private moments where Roke fell in love with Leah, where they scouted the highlands in the dark, their hands brushing innocently together as they stop for water. Fitchner surveying them from a copse of trees, taking notes on his datapad. We watch the first time they sleep snuggled under the same blankets in the gate's keep, and as Roke takes her off to the highlands to steal his first kiss, only to hear boots on rocks, and see Antonia and Vixus emerge from the mist, eyes glowing with optics. They took Leah, and when Roke fought, threw him off a cliff. He broke his arm and was swept down the river. By the time he returned, after 3 days of walking, I was supposedly dead by the jackal's hand. Roke mourned for me and visited the cairn I built atop Leah, only to find that wolves dug in and had stolen the body. He wept there by himself. Cassius grows somber witnessing this, reminding me of the distress on his face when he returned with several to discover what had happened to Leah and Roke, and perhaps feeling guilty for ever allying himself with Antonia. There's more videos, more little truths I discover, but the one viewed the most, according to the holodeck, was the time Cassius said he'd found 2 new brothers, and offered us places as lancers to House Bellona. He looked so hopeful then, so happy to be alive. We all did, even I, despite what I felt inside. My betrayal feels all the more monstrous watching it from afar. I refill Cassius's tumbler. He's quiet under the glow of the hologram. Roke's riding his dappled grey mare away from us, looking pensively down at his reins. "We killed him," he says after a moment. "It was our war." "Was it?" I ask. "We didn't make this world, and we're not even fighting for ourselves." Neither was Roke. He was fighting for Octavia, for a society that won't even notice his sacrifice. They'll play politics with his death, blame him. He died for them, and he'll just be a punchline. Cassius feels the disgust I intended.
That's his greatest fear, that no one will care that he goes. This noble idea of honor, of a good death. That was for the old world, not this one. How long do you think this goes on? He asks pensively. This war. Between us, or everyone?
Us.
Till one heart beats no more. Isn't that what you said?
You remembered.
He grunts. And everyone? Until there are no colors.
He laughs.
Well, good. You've aimed low. I watch him tilt the liquor around in his glass. If Augustus did not put me with Julian, what do you think would have happened?
Doesn't matter.
Say it does.
I don't know,
he says sharply. He downs his whiskey and pours himself another, surprisingly agile in his cuffs. He considers the glass an irritation.
You and I aren't like Roke or Virginia. We're not nuanced creatures. All you have is thunder. All I have, lightning. Remember that dumb shit we used to say when we would paint our faces and ride about like idiots? It's the deep spine truth. We can only obey what we are. Without a storm, you and I, we're just men. But give us this. Give us conflict. How we rattle and roar.
He mocks his own grandiloquence, a dark irony staining his smile.
You really think that's true? I ask. That it was stuck being one thing or another?
You don't.
Victoria says that about herself.
I shrug. I'm betting a hell of a lot that she's not.
That we're not.
Cassius leans forward and pours me a drink this time.
You know,